Thank you for that extraordinary reading that touches on issues of life and death and fate and what is good news and what is bad news. And in a lot of ways, that's my theme for today with the entering question of what is good about Good Friday. Let me start with last week. Last week, I wasn't here. There is a Jewish custom of unveiling a gravestone, depending on what branch and interpretation, but some good long time, after a burial. And last week, my wife and I were at the cemetery where my mother was buried, and is buried, and we were there to do the unveiling of the stone. We were expecting clergy to show up to do it because you really shouldn't do it yourself, even if you know the blessings. But clergy was ill that day, and so I figured as long as I had performed a marriage ceremony for my mother, I could complete it and do the unveiling. So I did, and did the prayers. And then from standing at this graveside and seeing the stone, and it was what was jarring mostly, I think, was seeing it next to my father's, because this is not the way children of divorce dream of seeing their parents reunited. They had not seen each other since 1958 when they were divorced. And there were a lot of tears and sobbing and my wife and I holding each other. And then we went across the street from the cemetery to the IMAX theater and saw Robots. Now, this is perhaps another kind of jarring metaphor for life, and I'm going to be exploring jarring metaphors today, for life, because we go from joy to sorrow, from sorrow to laughter, from tears to hilarity, from emotional and intellectual experiences to just silliness. And that's the part of everybody's life. That's part of the rhythm of who we are and how we experience life in this world. I'm not going to pretend that Robots was a profound religious experience. Although it had some elements in it that were what you would expect from Mel Brooks and Robin Williams, which was junior high school potty humor. And you had lots of visual effects, and you had lots of sight gags and jokes and cultural references. But it was multi-leveled and multi-layered. Underneath all the hilarity was a serious message about greed and about conformity, about the kinds of values or lack of values that we have in our society that plans obsolescence and creates needs and insecurities in people. And it might have been farce, but it was layered and textured farce. It was fable every bit as much as Aesop is a fable, or Aesop wrote fables and collected them. I take a very similar view, though perhaps a little bit more seriously, about our religious traditions. I don't take our various scriptures literally, but I take them seriously. I look at them for what they show and illustrate about our lives, and they are written on many levels. When we look at the scriptures of humanity, we see stories that we could consider as fables that we can draw fairly simple messages from. We see stories that are more legal codes, stories that attempt to be history. And we see stories that are extraordinarily complex and rich in terms of how we can get some kind of meaning from them. I think in the world that there are two styles of fundamentalism, one that says it's all literally true and says, and we must accept it, and another that says it's all silliness and farce and superstition and we must reject it completely. There is the middle way of taking it at least as seriously as robots, and to look at the stories and see why they have nourished, informed, sometimes misguided human beings for 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years, depending on the tradition. We're entering now Holy Week. Almost every religion has a time, a sense of a Holy Week. In Judaism, it's the 10 days of awe between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In Islam, it is the Ashura, which are the 10 days of contemplation. Christianity has 40 days to think about things, and then it's concentrated in this Holy Week that runs from today, Palm Sunday, through Good Friday, and then on to Easter. On the surface, the story is relatively simple to tell. Jesus enters Jerusalem to great acclaim, to palm fronds being put in his way, fanning him and waving at him, to hosannas, to the week turning grim. Though he enters as a rock star, as Jesus Christ superstar, the week turns grim as he teaches that the crowd will be fickle. Crowds are fickle. That fame and acceptance are fleeting. Sic transit gloria mundi. Fleeting are the glories of the world, or worldly glories. And that the story must end on Good Friday, at least the penultimate ending, must end with crucifixion. There is no other way for the story to end. The story echoes earlier sources. From Isaiah 53, the suffering servant is taken and betrayed and tried and convicted and stands mute, is whipped and scourged for the inequities of others and goes as a lamb to slaughter. Jesus' words on the cross of despair, "Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me?" come from the 22nd Psalm. And they are, to me, some of the most poignant and important words for people to think about. Because, and this is a sidebar, we often think of faith as constancy, and it isn't. We often think of love as being on one level, but it isn't. We don't love in exactly the same way. We don't have faith at exactly the same level. There are ups and downs, hills and valleys, and people who get into times of great self-doubt and self-examining can panic because they've lost their center, they've lost their sense of faith. Whatever your faith is, whether it's a religious faith or a political faith, a humanistic faith, whatever it is, faith in yourself, whatever it is, almost every human being goes through midnights of the soul and cries out at some level, "Why am I abandoned? Why have I been forgotten? Why do I feel lost?" And to me, one of the most poignant and powerful moments in the entire Christian story and in Holy Week is if Jesus can lose faith even for a moment and feel abandoned. What kind of standards do people have for ourselves when we find those moments of weakness, where we can't find our source, our nourishment, and we feel alone in some midnight of the soul? It's a remarkably powerful moment. The sources of Holy Week and the whole story is a repeated story and metaphor. As Judah sells Joseph for silver, and Joseph, who was put in a burial pit and left for dead, but it was only by being sold into slavery that Joseph was taken out of the pit, then to arise at the side of Pharaoh the king, and then to be the source of salvation to his tribe. So Jesus is betrayed for silver by Judas. The new version of Judah is put into a pit, rises from that pit to be the source of salvation for Christianity. These are repeated themes and stories about not knowing what the good news is and the bad news is. When Judah sells Joseph, it's probably not with the idea that this will be the source of salvation for his tribe. When Judas sells Jesus, it is probably not with the idea that he will be the source of salvation for Christianity. It is difficult in the moment to analyze the good news and the bad news. Sometimes the moral acts from the immoral acts. Life and moral choices are difficult and complex. And I guess that's really the heart of my message today. They are not easy. This week, almost everyone here, or if not everyone, knows the story of Terri Schiavo and how she has been through brain damage, either in a persistent vegetative state or simply brain damaged and permanently diminished. She is in a never-never land, the two sides of a political argument would make simple. Her quality of life is not worth anything, starve her to death. Or, all life is sacred, keep her in a vegetative, diminished state forever until the money runs out and she goes on the public, and then maybe some ideas will change. It's not that simple. There is a never-never land. There is a place between life and death where moral choices are very difficult. Even in the gospel story that takes place after Easter, when Jesus comes out of the tomb and he is seen, he says, "Don't touch me, because I'm not fully ascended." There is a kind of a recognition that there is a place between life and death, between the body and the spiritual, that we just can't be all that sure about, but yet must act. In the case of what is before the courts and the Congress, I don't know how much of it is politics. I don't know how much of it is cynicism and how much of it is religious fervor, and I don't know what the good answer is. I don't know if I would prefer for politicians to be acting cynically or to be acting out of an abundance of religiosity. I don't have a good answer on this. But almost every court has found the husband competent to be the reporter of her desire, and almost every legislative body has said, no, we have to keep her alive at all costs. I wish that they had the same fervor for keeping alive the people whose insurance runs out, for keeping alive the people whose medicines are taken off of the approved list, for keeping alive the people who are denied coverage because it's an experimental procedure, even when it's not an experimental procedure. All life is sacred. Apparently not. Bad cases make bad laws, and this case is an agonal case that should not be easy for anyone to deal with. I understand how the parents don't want to give up hope. I'm a parent. Many of you are parents. Many of you were children. Well, some of you still are. And I'm not necessarily looking at the young ones. Many of you... We're children, and you know that these kinds of calls are tremendously emotional, and that her parents cannot give up hope, I fully understand. I fully understand and sympathize with them. I don't know what the right answer is. This I do know. It's not simple. It's not bumper sticker. And both sides should be looking at some sense of respect for each other and get away from the moral absolutism, because the moral choice is not always easy to make or to know. And to the extent of our certainty, we should probably back off the more certain we are in our paths of life and death. I think that Holy Week is also a metaphor for every human life. That Jesus is received into Jerusalem with great hosannas, and I hope that most of us felt welcomed into the world. That most of us are that miracle of love made flesh and were received with joy and thanksgiving. Most of us will have midnights of the soul and have moments where if we have lived at all and taken chances at all, we will have failed. We will have fallen. We will have sensed isolation and rejection and tears, and then we'll come back from it. I think that is the strong metaphor of Holy Week. The end is not necessarily the end, and there is life after Good Friday. There is life after being put in the tomb for Joseph, and after being put in the tomb for Jesus, and after being put in the tomb in which life finds us from time to time. Last week I stood at my mother's grave and wept. I took seriously the tradition of not visiting the grave site for a good long period of time. The story on the literal level is that the soul needs some time to find peace. And so you stay away from the grave so that the soul of the departed can find peace. And no more than 11 months you're supposed to take, because it can't take the soul more than 11 months to find peace. There is no eternal punishment in Judaism. Eternal guilt, maybe, but not punishment. But I think that the deeper meaning is personal and psychological. We stay away from the grave so that we can find peace, so that we can heal from our loss, so that we do not remember those whom we loved, whether young or old, in their final days, in their agonal days, when they were diminished by age, by deterioration, whether by dementia, whether by stroke, whether by disease. And we see them not at this little slice of time at the end, but we are able to expand our memory to see and feel and sense them in the totality of their lives as we experienced it and can remember it. That grave is a powerful metaphor for our hearts. We stand at the graveside in the beginning, and it is a deep hole, a gash in the earth. That is the gash in our hearts, the hole that is left in our lives. That hole is filled in, and over time, when you come back, if you came back every day, you might not see the difference. But when you come back after 9 months or 10 months or 11 months, the hole has filled in. The grass has begun again to grow. In the springtime that we welcome today, there is new life taking place, and you see it. It's not completely settled in. You can still tell that it's a relatively new grave. There is, in a sense, a scar that runs around it as the new grass has not completely blended in with the old. But we see the healing. We feel the healing. We can measure our own lives and hearts by the healing that we see in the earth and the life that returns. This, I think, is the important message of this week. Life is precious, but death is not necessarily always an enemy. It is sometimes a release and a relief, sometimes to be welcomed as a deliverer. And life is made beautiful by its scarcity. We share a few moments together in the sunshine and even in the rain. And we give thanks for the opportunity of being here, of laughing, of weeping, of mourning, and of celebrating, and of living this wonderful miracle for a while together.